Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording on September 18th. It's 1:02 p.m. and the Federal Reserve has cut interest rates by a quarter of a percent as expected. And that throws into a rather sharp contrast the fact that the effective rate for the Fed funds rate is now 2.3%, or at least it was when this market shut on the 17th. Well, what that suggests is that there are a number of factors that are contributing to this illiquidity. The first is that the Fed has been piecemeal in the quantity of money that it's willing to supply to the market. They've been contracting the size of their balance sheet. So that's now over. There is no way that they can continue to contract their balance sheet when they can't control the short end of the curve. So we're starting to see it picking back up, and it's very likely that it's going to seek to break this sequence of lower rally highs in the not so distant future. It's worth reminding ourselves that this index is updated once a week, so we'll get another update tomorrow. When we think about what they have been up to over the course of the last year, they've taken a substantial quantity of cash out of the system. Then, of course, on the other side of the ledger, you have the fact that the Treasury is ramping up sales of new debt, which is sucking money out of the system as well. And then you have the banking sector, which has seen its balance sheet contract as a result of the burden of additional regulation that's been imposed following the credit crisis. With banks unable to increase the size of their balance sheets and therefore they just don't have the firepower to absorb the quantity of treasuries that are being produced, it's very likely the Federal Reserve is going to have to step up and fulfill that function. So it is increasingly likely that the Fed is turning into both the first and the last resort in terms of funding requirements. Well, that isn't exactly quantitative easing, because what this is, in fact, is normal central banking. Central banking 101 is to ensure there is enough of liquidity in the system for the economy to function normally, and that's exactly what's required now of the Federal Reserve. So it is quite natural for the size of the balance sheet to start to inflate from these levels. Well, what that also suggests is that we are at a permanently higher plateau in terms of the size of the Fed's balance sheet. They are going to find it extraordinarily difficult to contract the balance sheet any further than has already been achieved, unless, of course, we see the quantity of bonds outstanding starting to contract. The only possible way that could occur is if the federal, if the U.S. Treasury were to start paying down its debts in an accelerated fashion, and that looks extraordinarily unlikely when they are running trillion-dollar deficits. Well, what that suggests is we're going to have a very liquidity-rich environment for the foreseeable future. It also rather suggests that the next time there is a bout of quantitative easing, then it is likely to dwarf the size of the assistance programs that have been initiated previously. There are a number of market commentators have been talking about the fact that the quantitative easing is losing its punch, that the first round was more effective than subsequent rounds because of the base effect. Well, what that just suggests is that they just have to keep adding zeros. And when we start to think about it in those terms, then there is a bid for an inflation trade here. The US economy is at close to full capacity. Unemployment is very low. Wage demands are starting to rise. There are two notable strikes on at the moment, and we haven't really had strikes for much of the last decade. Then, of course, there is the additional potential for commodity prices to start to do better. When we look at the continuous commodity index, it is obviously been affected by the oil price. It is right in the region of the trend mean, and it has pulled back over the last few days. There has been a rivetingly consistent sequence of lower rally highs since the middle of the second quarter in 2018. If it can sustain a move above 400, well, then we are back in a demand-dominated environment. So this is a rather important area for some evidence of a return to demand dominance to start to appear in the short term. But this is also the period where we might anticipate there should be an inflation scare, because we are increasingly seeing late-stage developments in terms of the trends that we have out there. Valuations are on the higher side, but they're not quite at bubble levels. Where we certainly have bubbly characteristics are in the bond market. The kind of acceleration that we've seen over the course of the last few months, with 17 trillion of bonds in negative territory, is a mania if anyone has ever needed evidence of one. And then the very clear upper dynamic in terms of the yield that we saw last week, well, that suggests a low of at least near-term significance in terms of the yield, and quite likely a reversionary process back up towards the mean, which would suggest that there is at least another 50 basis points of risk in the 10-year Treasury yield. Then we would have to question whether we're going to see an additional move on the upside in terms of the yield. That really would coincide with an inflationary shock. Or we get a realization of what everyone was predicting when yields were contracting towards 1.5%, which is that the US is going to also follow Europe and Japan into negative yielding territory. Well, I think there is a market in that particular view right now, considering the size of the upper dynamic that we've had. What is perhaps more important is that the Federal Reserve is now acting as if it is the central bank to the world, and that is quite similar to the kind of activity it was performing back in 2006 and 7, and now we're starting to see similar types of events occurring. When we then think about the fact that the US economy is still in expansion territory, and the consumer is still in robust form, and there has been a distinct absence of upticks in the unemployment level, well, what that suggests is that we are likely to see bubbly activity emerge in the stock market as well. And the S&P 500 today was off its lows and didn't quite finish in positive territory, but it did close back above this psychological 3,000 level. The Dow Jones Industrials had been down about 100 points at one stage and finished in positive territory. In fact, that is an upside key reversal, but it's a very small one. The key to the key is size, and something like that would clearly need upside follow-through tomorrow. But much more important than that is that all of these primary Wall Street indices are really very close to the region of their all-time peaks. And when we look at these trends over a decade of history, these look like bullish consolidations. We had very clear, large upside key reversals in June, and we've had follow-through on the upside, and subsequently the lows have held. So this entire pattern over the second half of this year has looked like a bullish consolidation, and it is quite likely we are going to see the market break on the upside. Now, the ability of the market to sustain that move, and the willingness of investors to start bringing money in off the sidelines, where trillions of dollars are parked in cash, well, then that is going to be the true test of whether we are in fact going to have a classic bubble to complete what is already a 10-year uptrend. Gold prices in here today were in negative territory. It was down about $8. It was off its lows. It was also off its highs. There's certainly a market in here, but it does look increasingly likely that there is a a somewhat lengthier pause unfolding, and there is, I think, a strong likelihood that we are going to get a somewhat lengthier pause in order to allow that wide overextension relative to the trend mean to be unwound. I do think that there is likely to be a better buying opportunity arise in the precious metal markets. Silver as well was down 34 cents, but it was off its lows, and there is some support starting to come through around the $17.50 area, and it has been substantially more volatile. What I find particularly interesting about the precious metal markets is that classically silver has led gold. It has been a lead indicator for the precious metals. That has certainly not been the case on this occasion. And the gold shares also have been responding to gold rather than leading gold. And they were also off their low in here today. But generally, we would anticipate that these less liquid markets would be leading on the upside. Then when we think about the Bitcoin market, it is usually Bitcoin tends to lead in terms of its performance. The price has been very inert over the course of the last month, and the amplitude of this range has been contracting. There is an incremental sequence of higher reaction lows. There is also a very clear sequence of lower rally highs. The next break, when it occurs, is likely to be surprising, not least because of the very inert trading that we've had. There is a halving of the reward for mining Bitcoin coming up, most likely in May of 2020. And historically, at least over the course of the last decade, every time there's been a halving, then the price has rallied rather spectacularly ahead of that event, as people price in the illiquidity and, or perhaps the better way of thinking about it, is the limited supply argument becomes more forceful. Well, if that's indeed the case, then it is likely that when the breakout comes, it's probably going to be on the upside. But of course, that is dependent on the lows holding, and the lows are really quite proximate to where the price is trading right now. Meanwhile, the Ethereum price has steadied over the course of the last couple of days. It was in mildly negative territory in here today, but it is at least demonstrating near-term support in the region of the trend mean. And I think Ripple is also a rather interesting test case here, because it did not move to a new low in the first half of this year, but it did move to a new low in the wide sell-off in alt coins back in August. And it has also rallied rather impressively over the last two sessions. So if it can push back above that trend mean, it has already broken the downward bias since the beginning of July. If it can push above the trend mean, we're back in a demand-dominated environment. There is the potential here that the altcoins are playing catch-up, that they are starting to attract interest as people put positions on in advance of the Bitcoin price, in fact, moving higher. So I think the cryptocurrency markets are starting to look more interesting. When we think about what's going on in terms of the oil price, there is no debate in terms of the additional risk premium that has now been attached to the Middle Eastern region generally. But there is no shortage of oil, and the USA is now by far the largest producer. The price was down a dollar in here today, and there is speculation that Saudi Arabia is going to move heaven and earth to try and get its capacity back online, and that it may be able to do it faster than might have been considered in the last few days. When we think about the price action, the very swift move on the upside did break the succession of lower rally highs. If this is a return to demand dominance, then the region of the trend mean should hold. If the price pulls back below $60, then it will have been nothing more than a flash in the pan. With Wall Street continuing to do well, then that has, I think, been boosted by the relative strength of the dollar. And the dollar was again in positive territory in here today. And this has been a very choppy environment over the course of the last 12 months. These kinds of choppy environments where there isn't a clear trending environment don't generally last indefinitely. And when we think about what the challenges are, well, Europe obviously is engaging once more in quantitative easing, but what Europe really needs is fiscal spending, and there's not a great deal of appetite for that in the halls of Paris or Berlin. And that does throw the onus for support back onto the central bank, and some of the only tools they have still available to them, without going to extremes, is quantitative easing. So that should put downward pressure on the euro over the medium term. When we then think about what's going on in terms of the European stock market, well, the Euro stocks is right in the region of the upper side of its range since May. But the most important thing is that it has been ranging above the trend mean, and it is likely that if Wall Street pops on the upside, it will take Europe with it. The Bank of Japan has not been as enthused about the quantitative easing over the course of the last 18 months, and that has weighed on the Japanese stock market, but it has been up in a dynamic manner over the course of the last 3 weeks, and it has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. The second section index, which has been a reliable lead indicator for the market, was in negative territory today. It needs to sustain a move above the trend mean and to break the 18-month sequence of lower rally highs to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. When we look at what's going on in China, then the market was in positive territory today, but certainly not in a dynamic manner. The reality here is there is the clear potential that while the world is worried about the Middle East, they're worried about the outlook for the US election, and they're worried about the outlook for monetary policy and fiscal policy, I think the bigger risk is that China is continuing to slow. They have got a significant issue in terms of the quantity of debt that's outstanding. They have an issue in terms of liar loans, which is unresolved, and that is, I think, continuing to weigh on their economy. It's one of the other reasons why they have been rather shy about trying to support the wider market. If we look at the house price growth, then in tier one cities, it certainly improved from early 2018, but is potentially now rolling over. And in tier two and three cities, it also started to improve from early 2018, but is also now starting to roll over. When you have 50 million houses that are vacant, then it's hard to justify building more. And I think that's a rather important point that there is an extraordinarily large quantity of houses that have already been built in China. China's urbanization has pretty much been done. There has been a significant backward migration out of the main cities and into the hinterland because of the slowdown in manufacturing. So that also reduces the demand for new housing in the tier one cities. And these are quite clear trends that do not seem to be popping up in the performance of the stock market because the stock market is so heavily influenced by the actions of the government. What I think is most important to pay attention to is the continued trend in iron ore and in copper. Iron ore prices have unwound back towards the trend mean and have been steadying over the course of the last couple of weeks. So that is a response to the attempts to, I think, support spending and the economy. Copper prices still have the sequence of lower rally highs. We're in an additional negative territory in here today, not in an especially dynamic manner. I think there is a good betting odds that the 250 cent level is going to hold, but we're going to have to see a clear upward dynamic to confirm a higher reaction low in here. And most particularly, it's going to have to sustain a move above $2.75 to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And I think we're at what might be considered a do-or-die moment for some of the iron ore producers. For example, Anglo American is pausing here in the region of the trend mean. It has certainly overshot the trend mean on a number of occasions over the course of the last few years, but on each of those occasions it has been able to push up and through it in a dynamic manner. That was certainly the case in 2017, and it was again the case in 2018. Well, we've had the rebound over the course of the last couple of weeks. Now it's the real test of whether we're back in a demand-dominated environment is in whether this low above 1600 P will in fact hold. When we then look at the wider mining sector, the FTSE 350 mining index, which is, I think, a pretty good arbiter of what's going on in terms of the global mining sector, has also paused here in the region of the trend mean. It has been ranging mostly below that psychological 20,000 level for nearly 2 years now, and it's going to have to sustain a move above it in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. When we look at the FTSE 100, it was in negative territory in here today, but I do think that this entire range above 6,500 is a first step above the base. The valuation disparity that we have in the UK as a result of the questions surrounding Brexit, well, there is a lot of money that could potentially flow in to support the UK stock market if the Brexit question is eventually answered satisfactorily. And I think people will be waiting until that is in fact complete before committing capital. But as long as that 6,500 point level holds, then this does continue to look like a first step above the base. And the pound has also at least steadied around the 120 area and is pausing right now around 125. This continues to look like a reversion back towards the mean at least. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.